Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report podcast, and today is March the 26th, 2024. It has been 3,711 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 35 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 32 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Monday and Tuesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission – the truth. Because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. We maintain Russia is taking advantage of US inertia to restart its campaign to destroy Ukraine's electrical infrastructure. 2. We maintain the continued disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, resulting in another violation of NATO alliance airspace on the night of March the 23rd. 3. We maintain that the filing of a motion to vacate against Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and the April the 19th resignation of Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher has created a window of opportunity that could move U.S. military aid for Ukraine forward. 4. Ukraine continues to systematically target Russia's oil refining capability to cause economic harm and degrade Russian mobility. 5. Based on statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin and his proxies and the actions and inactions of Ukraine's allies, the world remains in the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 6. In our assessment, the second phase of the Russian 2024 winter offensive has reached its culmination point, and Russia is preparing for a summer offensive. 7. Ukraine's shift to a fab-band strategy to wear down Russian combat power continues to be effective. This is the last day for this entry. 8. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. We begin today's war report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts. The operational tempo remains low in the Kupiansk area of operation, or AO. The Russian Ministry of Defense, Armored, claimed there was light fighting in the area of Sinkivka. Ukrainian officials reported that repairs to the Kharkiv TES-5 combined heat and power plant will take at least a year after it was repeatedly attacked on March the 22nd and the 23rd. The plant's turbines and generators are irreparable and will have to be built to order in Europe or North America. The limited power that is reaching the city and oblast is coming from external regions, with most of Kharkiv in darkness. At the time of recording, Kharkiv was under another wave of attacks by Shahed 136 one-way drones. In the Kremennaya AO of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces intensified their attempts to advance on Terny and Yampolivka. Geolocated video showed that a Russian attempt to advance northeast of Terny failed, but passed the gray zone on the war map. Based on this new intelligence, a minor adjustment was made. In the Siversk AO, Russian forces continued their attempts to advance on Bilohorivka from the southeast, suffered significant losses and retreated. Here's what's happening in the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Soledar AO, Russian troops renewed their efforts to advance on Rozdolivka, failing to make new territorial gains. In the Bakhmut AO, there were no reports of fighting in the area of Bogdanivka, suggesting that Russian forces were unable to consolidate recent gains. Battles continued in Ivanivske, with no significant changes in the situation. In the Klishivka AO, Russian forces continued their assaults on Ukrainian positions north and east of Klishivka without success. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces have likely entered another brief operational pause in the Avdiivka AO, with a reduction in the number and intensity of attacks. Fighting continued on a line from Berdyche to Semenivka to east of Umanske, ending on the western edge of Tonenke. The stabilization of Ukraine's artillery capabilities and favorable weather for drone operations has significantly slowed Russia's advances. For the south, fighting continued in Porvomayske and, according to Russian mercenary Moblogovo Gonzo, quote, in the area of Nevelske. Wait, you mean the Russian Ministry of Defense capture claim was a lie? I'm so shocked. You hear this? This is my shocked voice. Theater-wide, Russia only initiated 45 ground attacks on March the 25th, with one-third in the Vuhledar AO. Russian sources claimed that Ukrainian forces stopped attempts to advance past Pobeda. Heavy fighting continued in Novomikhailivka, with the Ukrainian forces holding their new defensive lines. In the Staromlinivka AO, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported that Russian forces continued their attacks west of Staromayorske without success. In Zaporizhia Oblast, the intensity of fighting remains low in the Orikhiv AO. Southeast of Orikhiv, Russian forces attempt to advance on the southwestern edge of Bilohiria without success. Positional fighting continued northwest of Verbove and south of Robotyne, with no change in the situation. Ukrhydroenergo reported it would take years to restore the Dnipro hydroelectric power plant in Zaporizhia, representing the loss of 1,000 megawatts of daily power generation. It will take 9 to 12 months to build customized parts to repair the facility, and then another 6 to 12 months to complete repairs. In better news, engineers have re-established the ability to open and close the sluice gates. Here's what we know about the situation in the Black Sea, occupied Crimea, Mykolaiv and Odessa regions. The main Directorate of Intelligence of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, UR, reported that the Project 775 Ropuha-class large landing ship, LLS, Yamal, suffered the most damage during the March the 23rd cruise missile attack on occupied Sevastopol. Kyiv claims that the ship suffered a direct hit, which penetrated the upper decks and caused the list to starboard. We had previously assessed that satellite images indicated that at least one Project 775 LLS suffered significant damage and was being maneuvered into a dry dock, appearing to be leaking fuel. Odessa was attacked for the fourth day in a row, with Russian ballistic missiles hitting electrical and civilian infrastructure and a beach hotel. Four women were wounded in a double-tap attack on the holiday resort. Emergency blackouts continued and the trolley network has been closed. As for the rest of Ukraine, in Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, rolling blackouts ended in Kryvyi Rih after the electrical grid was stabilized. Russia heavily shelled the Nikopol Rayon, wounding 11 and targeting the 330 kV substation that keeps one of the external electrical connections to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant stable. I'd ask, what's wrong with Russia? But I already know the answer. And it's not funny anymore. Moscow, are you trying to cause a nuclear disaster? David, anything from the International Atomic Energy Agency?
Funny you should ask. There is a tweet from the International Atomic Energy Agency after this incident. It just wanted to make sure that you knew that an egg-sized piece of uranium can produce enough energy for one human being for their entire lifetime.
Well, that's an exhilarating fact about how a chicken egg-sized piece of uranium could provide enough energy for one person for their entire lifetime. I was hoping to hear something more like Russia continues to violate the pillars of nuclear safety. Russia launched 2-3 M-22 Zircon anti-ship hypersonic missiles from ground launches in occupied Crimea at Kyiv. Unlike the previous two launches in February, these missiles appear to have achieved sustained flight at hypersonic speed between 8,000 and 10,000 km per hour. Patriot air defense systems intercepted both missiles, but due to their velocity, falling debris caused significant damage. While the Zircon achieved sustained hypersonic speed, the fact that both were intercepted indicates that it is still not a true hypersonic weapon. The ability for missiles to reach ballistic speed has existed since 1942. Another engineering requirement for a modern hypersonic weapon is the ability to detect and take in-flight evasive action against air defense systems and then return to its course. This isn't meant to dismiss the Zircon, it is still a significant achievement. Missile debris struck a three-story gymnasium in Kyiv, collapsing the building. 10 people were wounded across the city, including a 16-year-old teenager and a 33-year-old woman who suffered a traumatic brain injury. She's not expected to recover. Ukrainian forces have recovered many pieces of debris. I'm sure that our dear friends in Langley, Virginia, can't wait to examine what we've found, but I suggest it should come with a price. Say $60 billion? I don't think Ukraine requires cash. I'm sure Kyiv is more than ready to accept ammunition, air defense missiles, mine-clearing equipment, F-16s, a couple of more Patriot air defense systems, and a lot more Bradley fighting vehicles. The Russian ambassador to Poland, Sergei Andreev, ignored the request from the Polish Ministry of Foreign Affairs to explain why a Russian KH-101 or 555 air-to-ground cruise missile violated Polish airspace on March the 24th. Andreev refused to meet, stating that Poland did not provide evidence, quote, regarding the violation of Polish airspace, and there was no point in raising this topic, unquote. Quick sidebar. If Poland had shot down the missile over Poland, they would have dozens of pieces of proof. The chief of the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Poland, Wiesław Kukula, said that his country did not intercept the missile due to the risk of debris landing in populated areas, but added, quote, "Our current approach to this situation is, we choose to believe that it was to a large extent a deliberate act," unquote. Polish farmers lifted their blockade at the Mamonowa-Grzegodzkie checkpoint on the border with the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad. Protesters said they would keep the checkpoint closed through April the 20th and cited the upcoming Catholic Easter holiday for the end of the blockade. You know, the Catholic Easter holiday that 71% of Orthodox Christian Russians don't celebrate. Warsaw is expected to announce that the transit of Ukrainian agricultural products through its territory will be blocked starting on the 1st of April. Negotiations on the licensing of agricultural exports from Ukraine are being completed, which will introduce the new restrictions. How bizarre is that? Ukrainian grain cannot travel in Poland, and Russian missiles apparently can. Here is what's happening on the Russian front. These are the bits you need to know about the March the 22nd terrorist attack on the Krokus City Hall in Moscow. The death toll climbed to 139, 12 people were reported missing, and 182 wounded. Russian autocrat Vladimir Putin made another statement confirming that Islamic extremists carried out the attack, but never mentioned ISIS-K. He did mention Ukraine and the United States, which Russian propagandists are repeating. The terror group, in this case sorry it's not Russia, ISIS-K, issued a sixth statement condemning the torture of their operatives and promising new attacks in the coming weeks. Putin's claim that the timing of the attack is suspicious because it occurred during Ramadan is uneducated at best and disinformation at worst. ISIS and its offshoots consider Ramadan as a time to increase attacks. Multiple anti-terror experts have documented a sharp increase in terror attacks by ISIS over Ramadan as far back as 2016. The truth matters. The Freedom of Russia Legion released a joint statement with the Russian Volunteer Corps and the Siberian Battalion, welcoming the partial evacuations of parts of Belgorod and Kursk and the closing of shopping malls. Quote, "The civilian population must feel real support from the formal authorities in this difficult situation. At the same time, Putin's troops still continue to hide behind civilians, placing their units in the residential sector." Unquote. In the Kursk region, a border skirmish near the village of Valetovka left one pro-Putin soldier wounded. In the Belgorod region, 11 Federal Security Service of Russia, FSB, border guards aligned with pro-Putin forces were wounded by drone strikes and artillery fire near Gorkovsky. News source Astra reported that two more Fab 250 bombs fell off Russian aircraft last week, raising the march count to six. Russian propagandist Vladimir Solovyov outraged residents of Belgorod when he stated on his show, quote, "A large number of different creatures pretending to be bloggers wrote that the federal authorities forgot Belgorod, don't help the people, they have nothing. While Moscow is celebrating, Belgorod is dying. This is a vile hysteria." Unquote. Comments on the Russia One Vodka page included an invite to come to Belgorod and use public transit without a bulletproof vest and suggestions to move his children to the city. Channel administrators had to turn off the ability to comment. Solovyov backpedaled, saying that his comment was not directed at the people of Belgorod, but a single blogger who wrote last week that, quote, "The feds have abandoned the city." Unquote. The leader of the mercenary mobloger channel Wargonzo, Semyon Three-Toed Pegov, reported that one of his propagandists, Ekaterina Limarenko, was detained by Belgorod authorities overnight for filming the motorcade of regional governor Vyacheslav Gladkov. Limarenko was arrested along with a reporter from the Russian state media channel RBK. She reported the RBK journalist was released quickly, while she went through interrogation. Limarenko said she was detained because records show she made a single call to a Ukrainian phone number on April 22, 2022. Quote, "The interrogation was conducted generally well. They did not beat or threaten, but cinematic phrases like, 'It's better to say everything at once, the sentence will be shorter,' 'If we suspected you, we would have talked differently,' and 'How long have you been working for the armed forces of Ukraine?' they said to me." Unquote. Pegov blasted Governor Gladkov, writing, quote, "I used to think that he was a heroic and reasonable leader. For some reason, he kept Wargonzo project intern Limarenko in a cage for almost a day. It's hard for me to understand why, despite everyone uniting and helping the country fight terrorism, officials of this rank suddenly decide to show their power." Unquote. "Just my rambling thoughts. Here's an idea. Maybe Moscow doesn't want Russian state media, unaffiliated bloggers, and propagandists sharing the truth about the situation in Belgorod because it makes Putin look bad." On his official Telegram channel, Gladkov reported Belgorod was shelled for the 14th day in a row. Here is my theater-wide update. The High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, reported that the approximately 200,000 artillery rounds promised to Ukraine by March 31st have been delivered. He added that the EU will deliver another 500,000 artillery rounds by December 31st, and private contracts with European arms manufacturers will deliver an additional 400,000 shells by the end of the year. This is in addition to the Czech Republic-led ammunition initiative, which will deliver 300,000 shells by June and has secured an additional 1.2 million artillery rounds. Iceland announced it was joining the Czech ammunition initiative and would provide $2.2 million in funding. While that is a small amount, historically Iceland is a neutral country, and this is the first time the nation has provided lethal military aid to Ukraine. It's kind of a big deal. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.